This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachowiak. This week, former state senator Tom Goolsbee announced his decision to become a lobbyist in 2015. Goolsbee is just one of many previous lawmakers who will influence the decision-making of his former colleagues in the General Assembly. In fact, much of how a bill becomes law relies on those with the ears of lawmakers, and a new report by the North Carolina Center for Public Policy Research shows former legislators top the list. Joining me now is the author of the study, Paige Worsham, who is a policy analyst at the center. Paige, welcome. Good to have you here.
Glad to be here, Frank. Thanks.
Let's get a kind of a big picture now about lobbyists overall. How many are there?
So at the end of the 2013 sessions, there were 768 registered lobbyists in North Carolina, and they represented over 1,000 groups and organizations.
And the point there is that lobbyists could represent more than one organization, which is why you have fewer lobbyists than you have organizations.
Correct. Something called a contract lobbyist is a lobbyist who represents a variety of clients.
So that's a lot, but you were really ranking kind of the top 60 just in terms of influence. Is that right?
Right. And the rankings were actually done by the legislators, the registered lobbyists, and the correspondents who cover the media. We send out surveys. The center sends out the surveys. And then the rankings are compiled by what those responses are.
So you're asking them, who do you think is the most influential?
Right.
And I suppose there are objective ways of getting at that, like getting to see whose stuff or whose legislation, you know, who is most successful. But it's interesting to get this subjective view from the people who are being lobbied, right? And among them, you found what in terms of former lobbyists?
So in terms of former legislators, there are 11 in these rankings who they were legislators, they were lawmakers, and they are no longer in elected office, and now they're lobbying. And 11 was a big number this year. It was a record number. There were 7 in the previous rankings, and so that is, somewhat of a jump from 7 to 11. And it shows that former legislators continue to, have influence over policymaking in the legislature.
Now, and I want to be clear about this. So it's 11 who ranked among the most influential, but were there more former legislators among the lobbyists than 11?
I think that was it. I think if you were a former legislator, it was a good chance that you were going to be ranked.
And you ended up in 11. So for a long time now, this number had stayed around in terms of former legislators turned lobbyists and also with a lot of influence, somewhere around 6-7, something like that?
Exactly. So for about the past 10 years of rankings, it was about 7 or 8 who would show up in the rankings, and they had been former legislators, and then they were influential lobbyists. So it was 11 this year, and that did show a difference.
That's a big jump. How do you account for that, or do you?
Well, I think that, a lot of legislators say that part of what's important to them and a lobbyist is how they get information. And it's important that they get solid information from both sides of the issue, and they get it succinctly and kind of when they need it. And so I think as a former legislator, these people know the process and they know the people. Former Representative Harold Brubaker, who tops the rankings list, told me that when he was a lawmaker, he appreciated brevity. And so he knew that he needed to get in, get his message across, and let the legislator get on with their business. And so when they become a lobbyist, they use kind of what was effective when they were a legislator.
And does this cross party lines? Is it just the fact that you were a colleague no matter what side of the aisle you were on? I mean, does that count for more than party affiliation, or does it count for a lot?
In these rankings, there were actually both parties, former legislators from both parties. Harold Brubaker was a Republican. He served for 18 years, and he served as Speaker of the House for 4 of those. But there were also Democratic former legislators who showed up in the rankings as well.
So, and this is obviously a Republican legislature who would then rank even Democrats among the most effective, suggesting that, and you talk about this in the report, the fact that not only do they know the process, the kind of nuts and bolts, how a bill becomes law, but also the dynamics. You may not want to go right to the chair of that committee. You might know that the person who has the most influence on him or her is somebody else.
The legislature can be, and the legislative process itself can be a little convoluted and confusing, and it helps to know something as simple as when committees meet and where they meet and who the staff is and who it's helpful to talk to. So people who have had that experience, they can then use those contacts and that knowledge.
Now, when you talked about the idea that Brubaker, for instance, said he appreciated brevity.
Right.
When you're asking this question, who's the most influential, is there a chance they might conflate that with who I actually like to meet with the most, whether or not they were effective, at least they were short?
Well, I mean, you know, we don't know that because the rankings don't – all we know is, you know, what respondents put down as their list. So the report does show, you know, who people list, and Harold Brubaker, he came out on top.
And who else was on that list?
So in addition to Harold Brubaker, there were 25 people who ranked for the first time in these rankings. So, for example, that included a variety of people representing associations, nonprofits, some corporations. There were legislative liaisons. Fred Steen, a former legislator, now represents Governor McCrory in front of the legislature, and he was one of the most influential on the list. And then there were 37 contract lobbyists, which we discussed earlier, were lobbyists who represent, you know, a variety of clients and not just who they're employed by.
And this is kind of interesting because as I looked at the list, it appeared to me that some of those individuals were representing clients who were not only diverse, but sometimes had, it would seem to me, issues that may be at odds. Is that possible to do in this business?
Well, I'm not sure of the specific, you know, how you speak to all of your clients, and I'm sure that there's a lot of explanations going on. But that's part of the reason that the report does list, you know, who each lobbyist represents, so that the public can see what corporations, what individuals are being represented. It's also an important piece of information.
Can you tell from the list whether or not these are a particular kind? In other words, are corporations better represented than interest groups? Do liberal groups get better representation than conservative or vice versa? Anything about ideology or type that also might privilege one lobbyist over another?
It really runs across the board in terms of number of clients. You know, for example, Harold Brubaker had 21 clients. And so there's a variety of representation going on there. It's healthcare groups, it's energy groups, it's nonprofits, it's contractors, the Farm Bureau, the Chamber of Commerce. You know, these rankings really, they show that there's a variety of clients being put in front of legislators.
Now, I guess they don't have to report this, so there may be no way of knowing how lucrative it is for anyone to become a lobbyist, whether they're a former legislator or not. They make good money, do we know?
The report does not include that. They just asked for the... We just asked them to list the most influential.
How about the issues? Do hot issues tend to track higher and gain more influence or show that they have more influence? Or do the issues not matter as much in these rankings?
I think that by looking at who is ranked, you can see what some of the important issues were. For example, I mentioned that 3/4 of the 60 ranked have a connection to a healthcare or a medical group. And that continues to be a very important topic addressed by the legislature. Things like changes in our tax laws, changes in our regulations. Those were very, you know, highly discussed last session. And 3 Chamber of Commerce lobbyists are ranked. There are multiple people from representing all those groups.
Now, seeing from one side, if you're a lawmaker and you see a former colleague coming your way, that seems like a benign kind of relationship. It's okay for somebody you know to come and represent a group. But there's another side of this equation, which is that someone who had been writing regulations or considering, for instance, laws that might affect these groups, to then turn around and become a paid lobbyist for the group, that does raise concern among the public. Talk about the cooling off period in the state of North Carolina.
North Carolina has a statutory cooling off period, which is the amount of time that a person must wait to register to lobby after leaving elected office. In North Carolina, that amount of time is 6 months. And there are 35 states that have a statutory cooling off period. And in some states, they run up to 2 years. And at the federal level, there's also a cooling off period before former members of Congress can can lobby the legislative branch.
Now, 6 months, I have to say, does not sound like a long time to go from regulator and legislator to suddenly working for the very companies that you may have to have legislated. Is there a concern? Is this something that comes up in the North Carolina legislature, whether or not to place greater restrictions on lobbying?
It is discussed. That is something that's, you know, definitely outside of these rankings, but that's something that's discussed, you know, among the legislators, and that's a policy decision, and they're going to have to decide that or whether to change it or not.
Well, it's good that we have this kind of data and this kind of regular reporting to help feed the public debate, and I appreciate what you've done, Paige, and thank you for being on the program.
Thanks, Frank.
Paige Worsham is a policy analyst for the North Carolina Center for Public Policy Research. On the state of things just ahead, Raleigh's Hopscotch Festival. We'll talk about that and hear some of the music on the state of things from North Carolina Public Radio, broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Please stay with us.